चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Vyapti, meaning the state of pervasiveness, implies both that which pervades and that which is pervaded. For example, in the inference of fire and smoke, smoke is the pervaded and fire is the pervader. Here, smoke is always accompanied by fire. Whenever there is smoke, there will also be fire. The verse, however, is not necessarily true. It is possible to have fire without smoke. For example, a Bunsen burner. But there are examples in which both the pervader and the pervaded coexist permanently. For example, fire and heat. There are, therefore, two kinds of concomitants, equivalent and non-equivalent. Right? This is what we were discussing before, that when you're making the connection between the middle term and the major term, right, is that sometimes it works both ways, but sometimes it only works one way, right? So if it's a universal, it works both ways. Then whichever way you use the example, it always functions, right? But if we find that it only works one way, if we use it the wrong way, then it's actually an invalid argument, right? So that's why one has to know, because otherwise the two are committed, but one might just emotionally just accept it. But actually, in fact, they're not. Right? Yes?
Can you explain what is exactly mean concomitance?
I think the concomitance means there's connection. Right? Means concomitance means that the two, they have a connection. There's like fire and smoke.
Yes.
But it's unequivalent, right? Non-equivalent.
Yes.
Means where there's smoke, there has to be fire, but you can have fire without smoke.
Yes.
Therefore, it's non-equivalent. But like fire and heat, that's equivalent, because there's heat, there must be fire, and if there's fire, there must be heat.
Yes.
Right? That goes both ways. So that's the idea, is that in this element of vyapti means that pervasiveness, that one pervades the other, it goes one way but not the other way. So the heat pervades smoke, but smoke doesn't pervade heat. I mean, smoke doesn't pervade fire, right? But fire pervades heat. But then heat pervades fire, fire pervades heat. Those two go both ways. So that's the meaning of vyapti, means how much it's connected to it. How much, you know, connected, it doesn't mean just touches it. It means that they're, you know, overlapping. Right? It means that one's existence is how you say it, concomitant with the other's existence. It means the two go together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Non-equivalent concomitance. Asama vyapti means you have sama, which means equal, right? And asama, which means unequal. So sama vyapti is... Asama vyapti is an invariable concomitance between two unequal entities, such as smoke and fire. It has already been shown that in this type of concomitance, one entity may be inferred from the other, but not vice versa. Right? Does that make sense? It's important because many times people use this concomitance wrong. Right? They just take it for granted that one means the other. Or, and sometimes, it's just there's no connection. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You've mentioned before that sometimes the devotees, and some of the devotees, therefore everything I do is devotion. But without the connection, it doesn't become devotion.
Yes. Yeah, yes, you could say, yeah, that would be a good one. It's because activities, even pious activities, aren't automatically devotional. But if they're performed with devotion, then only they become devotional. So the devotional, by touching the pious, it pervades it. But the pious doesn't pervade devotional. That would be a very good example. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just like I'm saying is devotional service is good, therefore good activities are devotional. So that's asama vyapti. It's not equal. Mm-hmm. It means devotional service is always pious, but piety is not always devotional. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's a very, very, you understand? Like that. Yes?
Can we call it also concomitant inference in one sense? Because it's logical what the people sometimes they think.
Well, inference is more is that there's an element you can't see. But means you could see fire and smoke, but in this case you're not seeing one of them. So it's the connection between them.
Can be a conjecture.
Yeah, so that would be your inference. But here the concomitants is just what's the connection between them. And I'm saying like that. That's the
one paragraph down is
more explanation. Okay. No, but according to we always do it backwards. We discuss it, and then when we read the paragraph, then we already understand that. Somehow or other, that's the way we work here. Okay. It has already been shown that in this type of concomitance, one entity may be inferred from the other, but not vice versa. Right? So that's the point, it's inferred by this concomitance. Means the concomitance is a fact. The inference is that it's referred by the other, inferred by the other. Equivalent vyapti. Samudvyapti. Is an invariable concomitance between two coexistent terms, either of which can be inferred from the other. For example, a chair is a nameable thing because a chair is knowable, and what is knowable is nameable. Here, nameable and knowable can both be inferred from each other. Right? Right, the chair and the name of the chair, those can go together. Because you can know what a chair is, so you can name it. If you can know what it is, you can name it. And if it has a name, means you can only have a name if it's known. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Concomitance denotes a relationship of coexistence, sahacharla. But not every instance of coexistence is an example of concomitance. So here's another detail. Fire, for example, often coexists with smoke, yet it may also exist without smoke. The coexistent relationship of fire and smoke depends upon certain conditions, temperature and wetness, for instance. The condition on which the relation of coexistence depends is called upadi. And for an inference to be valid, the relationship between the middle and major terms of a syllogism must be independent of any and all conditions, right? Because it's supposed to be universal. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if it's only in a specific condition, then you would have to say the exact condition in which it applies. But then you'd have to be establishing that the condition that you're referring to and the condition at hand is the same. Right? So then the weakness comes is then why would you have to give the specifics if it applies? Right? Unless it's in this condition it's like this, and so in this condition it's like that, so therefore there's a connection. But otherwise In other words, a valid concomitance represents an invariable and unconditional concomitant relation. Nitya anaupadika sambandha between the middle and major terms of the syllogism. Right. Means it can't be changed like that. So that would be an actual, you know, solid concomitance. Otherwise, then you have this non-equivalent, that in the certain condition, it can work the one way. Right? So there's conditions that create it. And the other one is just, if the one is there, the other is there. Right? If there's fire, there is heat. Right? If there's heat, there's fire. Right? But how does one know that a relation is invariable and unconditional? Vedantins reply that concomitance is established by the uncontradicted experiences of the relationships between two things. It means that you have the two different things, and there's no contradiction in their coexistence. But according to Nyaya, concomitance is established through the perception of classes. Samanya Lakshana perception. Right? Samanya Lakshana. Well, it means the ordinary Lokika, which has been discussed earlier in this chapter on the section on extraordinary perceptions. I'm taking that. Oh, I see. Samanya Lakshana. No, in the extraordinary. Excuse me. Actually, the Nyaya method of inference uses inductive reasoning. That is, it draws a particular conclusion on the grounds of a general and universally known truth. The universal truth is considered to fall within the range of vyapti. In Nyaya, there are three types of inductive analysis, or generalization. The first is anvaya, or uniform agreement in presence. This type of inductive process arises from observing a relationship in which, if one constituent is present, then in every instance the other constituent is also present. For example, whenever there is smoke, there is fire. Right? If the one is there, the other is always there. The second type of inductive analysis is the obverse of the first, and it is called uniform agreement in absence, vyatireka. In this method, a negative universal relationship or invariable concomitance is observed. For example, wherever there is no fire, there is no smoke. Right? You're just reversing it. It's not smoke and fire, fire and smoke. It means if there's wherever there's smoke, there's fire. So if there's no fire, there cannot be any smoke. Like that. In this method, the third type of inductive process is the combination of the first and second methods. In this method, known as uniform agreement in both presence and absence, anvaya vyatireka, or vyabhichara graha, both constituents of a relation are always found together. Neither is ever present without the other. From this, it is induced that there must exist a natural relationship of invariable concomitance between them. These three methods of generalization demonstrate a systematic technique for inductive reasoning. The most crucial concern, however, in any systematic inference is how to make certain that concomitance, the logical basis for the inference, is valid, that is, free from limiting conditions, upadis. Right? Because the upadis, your ideal is one that it never has condition where it doesn't apply. Then it's a very strong. But otherwise, if conditions apply, then you have to see that the conditions that you're discussing, it also are present. Otherwise, then it won't apply. Right? So that's the reason one wants to be very careful with something like that. Though it can be used, because it may be. You may be in a situation that it applies to the example you're using. This process of ensuring that vyaptis are free from all vitiating conditions, vitiating means that it'll reduce it or make it weak, is called upadinirasa. One way of ensuring this is by the repeated observation of both constituents of a relation under all possible circumstances to make certain that the relationship is in fact invariable. Another way is to employ hypothetical critical argumentation, or tarka. But Nyaya places the greatest emphasis on samanya lakshana, the perception of classes, as the major means for ensuring the validity of vyaptis, right? So the perception of classes means like how humans behave, or how trees are, how nature is, or how a city is, right? There's something that it's always there, it can always be observed. So they put the best, most emphasis on using that one as your how you're going to deal with your logical argument. So then that means there must be the ability to appreciate the groups or classes, right? So that means then you also have to be able to observe, unfortunately, this is just a side social thing, you have to be able to appreciate something other than oneself. And oneself is the center of everything, because I've noted that where there is that ability to understand that, okay, I may be, you know, I myself may be important, but I see myself within, you know, bigger groups. But when you have social situations where everybody just looks at it as themselves, then the problem is when you talk about this, what do you call that? Samanya lakshana, about the generalization that's there, they get offended. How can you put us into a box? Like that. And so you can't actually deal. So then this kind of logic doesn't really mean anything to them. It's all about the emotion and the feeling at the moment and who somehow or another better caught the moment. That's all. So it kind of goes outside of the these kind of elements. It becomes very... Does that make sense? So in other words... Yeah. So then there also has to be qualification of the person who's discussing it to be able to use logic, you know, very nicely like this. Otherwise you have to bring it into, because everybody will make these generalizations. Just you have to find which generalizations they are comfortable with. Right? And then stick within that category. If you go into others, then you don't. Like that. Does that make sense? Because that's the thing, is that Pajalpa means that there's something that is prominent at the time, because you don't talk Pajalpa about anything. You know, wow, there's a huge pile of dead leaves over there. Wow, that's a, how does that, I mean, what's going on? What's the world coming to? You know, anybody cares? No. Okay, so there's certain things that people, you know, take as very important that they're willing to discuss. So you have to see that you're careful about those. Right? And use some other area where it works very nicely. Right? Does that make sense? Like, you can say something very absolute, very, you know, direct, very, you know, strong on, you know, connection with car mechanics. Nobody has any problem. But as soon as you take the exact same thing and apply it into personal relationships, then, no, people freak out, and it's not like that, it can't be like that, shouldn't be like that, that's not just, that's not... Like that. So you just have to be careful that this samanya lakshana, the generalization, is something that they can understand. You know.
So you would generally just generalize on something else than who you're talking about. I mean,
it has to be connected to the person, otherwise they won't relate to it. But you always generally want to use third person.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to use them themselves. They get very, very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Unless there's someone who, you know, really wants to know, then you do that, and then, okay, then they understand exactly. But there's not many people like that.
We're talking like gyani, hardcore.
Generally speaking, it means depending upon what it is, depending on the background of that. But much of the time you find Brahmins can handle that, Kshatriyas can handle that. But at the same time, if you drop down even within those two categories where there's more of the, you know, the mode of ignorance or something in their passion, then it won't work with them either. They get offended very easily. You know. Or if somebody is very devotionally situated, then it's the point is if there's attachment, there'll be a problem. If there's not attachment, there won't be a problem. So you have to deal with those things that are the pleasant side of their attachment, not the, you know, the weak side. Classifications of inference. Nyaya provides three general classification systems for inference. The first classification system is based on psychological grounds. The second is based on the nature of vyapti, or the universal relationship between the middle and major terms. And the third is based on the logical construction of the inference. Right? So in other words, there's the mentality, there is the nature of your universality, that means the strength of the universality between the middle and the major term, and then is the third is just how you're going to construct your logic. Because you have to have all these five elements. But depending upon the psychological grounds, you may adjust that, like we were saying before. If someone is very confident, they just make their point. If they're not very confident how you're going to take it, they generally start by dealing with areas where you can't make a conclusion, because it's only the groundwork. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. According to the first system of classification, there are two kinds of inference. Right, so in other words, psychological. Svarta meaning for oneself and pradartha meaning for others. In svarta, the purpose of the inference is for one to gain correct knowledge by oneself and for himself. In this kind of inference, the whole process of reasoning is internal. One employs systematic logical reasoning to protect oneself from confusion and doubt and to arrive at correct inferential knowledge. Right, so in other words, this whole process, if you're applying that to what you're doing, that's what he's saying, is that one has to, in nyaya, you have to really look at it and constantly be analyzing that something that's important to you. What are the connections? What it means, whether it actually has a foundation. You know, and you look at it from all the different angles to make sure it has that universal element. Otherwise, it may apply in one situation, but because you're attached to it, you want to apply it in all situations, but it won't apply, so you have to be able to understand that. So how are you getting your own appreciation of this, right? Does that make sense? Well, the Vedanta was much more direct. What was it then? What do you say here? Yeah. Okay, Vedantins are saying concomitance is established by the uncontradicted experiences of the relationships. While the other is nyaya, is concomitance established through the perception of classes. Not really much difference. But the one is that you could take advantage of the, how you say it? What the acharyas have given. Their, in other words, their understanding based on their spiritual, how you say it? Yeah, based on the spiritual perception, right? The yogaja. Right? They're able to appreciate. So then we can take that example, use it, it'll work, even if we don't fully understand it. Right? But in the nyayas means you want to be able to bring it down, you can see that. Right? You're able yourself to see it. Right? Because you've analyzed it, you've gone through. It means the best is that you can bring it to that, then it'll be the strongest to present. But,
so yeah. In the nyaya, we can say that they don't use their examples of others to learn things?
No, they can. But the point is you would apply it until you will fully understand it. Then only you'd use it.
So they don't accept anything physical, which cannot be seen?
But if they can analyze it till they experience it, because the point is if you're going to do this, you yourself have to be basically situated nicely in goodness, you know, practicing and all that, so then slowly you would naturally develop those. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So it means, in other words, to use this, you'd have to be very nicely situated, basically in a very brahminical situation, like that. So it wouldn't be broadly used by a lot of people. Right? Yes?
Maharaj is telling me that in the Vedanta, the relationship, the absence of
Contradictions,
right? So, in that logic, we can accept that Krishna is a person and is also the truth. Why for the Nyaya and Gyan, it's difficult to accumulate relationship and process in the same.
Yeah, for us it's easy because of the Chitta Beda Beda Tattva. So for us, there's basically no contradiction practically in anything, you know? Like that, so we can see how everything connects together. So it makes it much easier. So then we don't really have to go through so much argumentation to get at something, because in here, because there's a difference, therefore there's the difference. But here is because the two things can simultaneously be different and non-different. So then we don't have so much difficulty. But at the same time is that we have to see that when we're applying whatever is our conditioning, that we're not applying it wrong. So they really have to use their senses and their intelligence. While for us, it's more by devotional service, it's revealed, it's appreciated. Okay. In Padartha, on the other hand, the inference is meant for others. Here someone is trying to prove the truth of his view. For instance, a man who is convinced of the existence of fire on a hill would use Padartha when attempting to convince others of the fire's existence.
Is it Padartha or Parartha?
Parartha, yeah, Parartha. The second classification system divides inference into three categories: Purvavat, Seshavat, and Samanya Todrishta. Both Purvavat and Seshavat inferences display causal uniformity between the middle and major terms, while Samanya Todrishta inferences exhibit non-causal uniformity of the middle and major terms. Here the term cause refers to an invariable and unconditional antecedent of an effect, and effect refers to an invariable and unconditional consequence of a cause. Right, so in other words, you can't vary the means. So basically, there's a universal result, and that's gained by a universal endeavor. So if you make that endeavor, you get this result. So therefore, you can see what the connection is very easily. When an unperceived effect is inferred from a perceived cause, that inference is deemed a purvavat inference. For example, it will rain because there are dark, heavy clouds in the sky, and whenever there are dark, heavy clouds, it means rain. Here, the future rain effect is inferred from the appearance of dark, heavy clouds, cause. Seshavat is the reverse type of reasoning, in which an unperceived cause is inferred from a perceived effect. For instance, it has rained recently because there's this swift, muddy current in the river. And whenever there's a swift, muddy current in the river, it has recently rained. Right? So in other words, you're focusing on the cause, one you're focusing on the effect. If the effect is there, there must be a cause. Right? If the cause is there, there must be an effect. Right? If it rains, then the river becomes muddy. If it's not raining, it's clear. Right, so we see the muddy river, so it had to have already rained. Right, it means in other words, the effect is the muddy river, so the cause of raining must have been there. Right, does that make sense? And so, but the other is that there's clouds, so that's the cause of, and therefore the effect will be it will rain. It's just, you know, it's just the reverse of the other.
So this is concomitance.
Yes, so you see the concomitance works, but it just has to work in that one way.
No, but that was the equivalent concomitance, which was working both ways, right?
Yeah, basically means you could say that whenever it rains, there has to be dark clouds, but sometimes you get dark clouds,
yeah,
it doesn't
no rain.
So
that's the non-equivalent concomitance there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in other words, it's pointing out is that when you're dealing, in other words, I'm working for something to understand it myself, or I'm doing it for the other's understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the second classification, it's not that you can't use all these at once. It's just the showing.
Yeah.
In other words, Nyaya just breaks everything down so it's exactly you can define it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no overlapping kind of, you know, definitions. That without, you know, knowing many of them, then you kind of get an idea, right? You know, it's very exact.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And finally, in Samanya Todrishta, the third kind of inference in this system of classification, the invariable concomitance between the middle term and the major term does not depend on the causal uniformity. One term is not inferred from the other, because they are uniformly related. In this kind of reasoning, conclusions are based on direct experience and on generally known truths. For example, an example of this sort of inference is the movement of the moon, which is inferred on the basis of its changing position in the sky, although the movement of the moon is not perceived directly by the senses. Yeah, because it means it has to move to be in a different position. But you can't perceive the one. You can perceive the other. Right? But the other one, you can perceive both. Okay. The third type in the system, invariable concomitance between the middle and major term, does not depend on causal uniformity. So it's not... Yeah. The last general classification of system is based on the nature of induction. Right? So that third one was logical construction. Okay, so the second one is based on the nature of vyapti, or the universal relationship. So that we've done. So one is that universal relationship is cause and effect. Right? See, fire is cause, you know, and smoke is effect. Right? So if you see the effect, you could say there's cause. Right? Or you can reverse it by saying there's no smoke, so therefore there can't be the cause of smoke. There's no fire. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, okay, this last is the nature of the induction, by which one attains the knowledge of the invariable concomitance between the middle and major terms of an inference. This system distinguishes among three types of inference. In the first, Kevalan Vai, the middle term is only positively related to the major term. Right? Because we said you can do it in the negative also, so it's in the positive. For example, all knowable objects are nameable. On the second, Kevala Vyatireka, the middle term is only negatively related to the major term. For example, whoever is dead has no pulse. This person has a pulse, therefore he's not dead. In the last category, Anvayatireki, the middle term is both positively and negatively related to the major term. This is the joint method of both Anvaya and Vyatireka. For example, all smoky objects are on fire. The hill is smoky, therefore the hill is on fire. No non-fire object is smoky. The hill is smoky, therefore the hill is on fire. Right, so you can do it from both ways. Okay, so Right, so they're very subtle, all these things.
Yes.
Very subtle. So you can understand why when it says somebody's trained in Nyaya, that they must be smart. I mean, it's just a matter of, this is all you deal with for a short while, because as we see, you're only dealing with the minor, the major, and the middle term. And then you're only connecting how the middle and major term are connected. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Is it a two-way or is it a one-way connection? You know, and is it in the positive or the negative, or it's both? You know what I'm saying? You know, or are you looking at the nature of it by its cause or its effect, or that which is not the cause and effect? You know, because it moving and the thing, they're not a connection. That's not the consideration. It's just as farther in the sky, but you can't see it moving. So you can't really put the two together. It's not that it's movement, because you can't perceive the movement. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just like that. So that's what you're doing, is just making sure that all that's in place, right?
Yeah. Now, how to recognize easily major term, minor term, middle one? How to recognize?
Means the middle term is what connects the major to the minor. Right, the minor is just the situation. The major is actually what's happening. But then why you can connect them, that's your middle term. Right? Means means you can have smoke on the mountain, you can have fire on the mountain. But the point is, to have smoke on the mountain, you have to have fire. So fire is the cause of the smoke. You know what I'm saying?
And is it possible for a different example to change? The middle one means to interpret.
I would think if you depends on your example, if it can be reversed or not, but or you can take it from the negative to the positive. But the point is just like, let's say there's the hill and you can see the clouds are raining, so then you can say the hill will be muddy. Right? So means, but you can't see the mud. Right? You can see the rain, you can see the hill. Right? So the point is then the mud is the major term. The rain is the middle term, and the hill is the minor term, right? Because the mud will happen to the hill, right? But it's happening because of the rain, because of the clouds. You know, so it's just a matter of, if you contemplate, then it's practice, then it's a matter of, after a while you start to see. Then, if you do it for a while, then it starts to become... obvious what's happening. But because people don't think like this, that's why you have to be trained in logic. Mm-hmm. If you're trained in logic, then you start to think that way. So previously, that was where education started. Mm. You started with grammar, logic, and rhetoric. That was that's what you learned at university. Right? Though university might start as early as 14 or 16, but that's what you started learning. When you understood grammar, rhetoric, and logic, then you moved on to areas of application, all the different things of math. Then when that was understood, then you took up learning an occupation. So in other words, just to be a part of the community, you had to think logically and know language by through which to express it. Then you were considered an educated member of the community. Like that. So then their discussions would be very logical in that.
In Sanskrit, some of these relations are, you have one word which relates only to one or to both. So it's easier. Some of them are not.
No, the problem is in English, then to get exact, then you have to get into words that we don't even use or know much about, we're not familiar with. It means you could explain it, but you'd have to be much more wordy. And the weakness for us mortals is the person who originally compiled this. His concept of writing is that it'll be written. You'll read it, then you'll think about it. Right? Means he didn't like writing so that it was so obvious from the writing that you didn't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's why it goes up to that point and stops. And that was his, because I remember many times when we were writing things, I would say we should do that. His thing is that's so obvious. Anyone with a brain can understand it. Why should we write it? I was saying, no, not most people don't have brains. And it was just painful for him to do that. Because it was just like, people are supposed to be smart, they're supposed to think, so you write in that way. It's much more exact and concise. You don't have to, less wordy. It's not that he couldn't do the other, he just didn't like to. So this is something where someone's not going and saying, but Maharaj, it's one of those things he wrote, like 30 years ago, and nobody's read since, like that. We're probably the only ones looking at it. Okay. The fallacies of inference. I think there's something more that they're not bringing out here, because he's showing the construction. Yeah, all knowable objects are nameable, therefore this has a name. Right? Very, very direct. Whoever is dead has no pulse. This person has a pulse, therefore he's not dead. So dead and pulse are connected. So that'll be the major and minor term. So the pulse is the middle term, and the dead is the major term. Right? Quite major, right? Yeah. So the person is the minor term. So the person has a pulse, that's the middle term, therefore he is not dead. So then it means he is the minor, is connected therefore to the major. Right? But in the negative, means instead of saying he is dead, he is not dead. Right? And then the last category, joint. All smoky items are in fire. Right? So the smoky is the how you say, middle term, the fire is the major term. The hill is smoky, right? So the minor is connected to the middle. Therefore, the hill is on fire. The hill, the minor, is connected to the major. Okay? And the other way, no non-fire object is smoky. Right? So non-fire in the negative, it's the major term. Mm-hmm. Smoky is the middle term. The hill is smoky, right? So the hill is connected to the middle term. Therefore, the hill is on fire. Right? In other words, you're using for logic a negative of the major term. Mm-hmm. Instead of the positive, right?
And the relation between the middle and the major is the vyapti. That's the
yes. That's the actual, the concomitance. What is the other term they use? State of pervasiveness. The fallacies of inference in the Nyaya system. Fallacies of inference are called hetabhasa. This term literally means a reason, hetu, that appears to be valid but is not really so. Right? So these are the others, if they followed it, if you understand it, it goes, or if the person somehow or another is just using intelligence, they may not understand the mechanics, but they're using it properly. Mm. But here, hetabhasa means it looks real but it's not. So as soon as you connect, because the way they used it or the motion or something, and it sounded, but then when you think about it, it's like, what has it got to do with each other?
This happens all the time.
Yeah, you know, so that's... There are five kinds of fallacies called shabhyabhichari, virudha, satpratipaksha, asidha, and badhita. The first, satyabhichara, means irregular middle. Right? In the correct inference, the middle term is uniformly and without exception related to the major term. It has to be. Right?
Yeah.
You know, because if it's not, because if the smoke's not connected to the fire, it doesn't work. You know, so if it's a matter of there's fire and there's no smoke, then smoke can't be the middle term. You know what I'm saying?
We end up on the octopus and the...
Yeah, all kinds of strange things. Yeah, and especially on Thursday. Right?
Everybody knows that.
Of course. Okay. In a correct inference, the middle term is uniformly and without exception related to the major term, right? Because of the conclusion you want to make. It's like you sort of say, this is good, right? So this is your minor term, good is the major term. But what makes it good? Mm. That's the whole point. If you say, so that's why then the natural thing is, oh, what do you mean by good? You know? And so then they'll have to explain it and show the middle term. And so if it's not connected to the middle term, that's the point. Rather than say, this is not good, you know, no, but that's good. No, the point is, why is it good? You know, why try to establish something else when they themselves may undermine their own thing? Right? Like you see is when Vaishnav Das and Chudamani were discussing. It's not that one said one and one said the other. The one said one and the other asked exactly, what do you mean? What do you mean by this? Or what is that? Or wouldn't that therefore infer this? Right? So, and then the other one would speak exactly on what he said now. So they wouldn't bring up something new. It would just logically just go from one thing to the next, because you're trying to show. So in other words, he's trying to show is that Vaishnavs are Hindu. Hindus follow the proper thing, but you know, so Vaishnavs don't associate with. It means Hindus don't associate with the Muslims, right? So therefore, the Vaishnavs associate with the Muslims. That's wrong, right? So he's not understanding the Vaishnav element. You know, it's actually that's dealing with the soul, not dealing with other considerations. So if that's there, the soul trumps the social. Because then that means then the soul is acting actually in its natural position. So therefore, if they're devotees, it doesn't matter what the background is.
Following this example, should we break the whole thing into major, minor, and middle term, or just the concepts?
No, it means that's what it means. It's, the concepts are either on the major, the middle, or the minor terms.
So because they were trained to be like that, so you have to train yourself to think in those terms. Otherwise, it just... You know.
Yes, well, that's the whole idea, because anvikshika means philosophy and nyaya together. It means that you use the philosophy, but according to this logical method. So if one can train oneself, then you'll find it becomes very easy to understand what others say. And because most others aren't trained, then they'll either not bother you or they'll stay away from you.
Well, they can speak nicely.
Ah, okay. Yeah, okay. That's one way of looking at it. Because they could also be around you and not bother you.
Yeah. Never tried that.
Yeah, no. See.
They should be pleasant with you.
There's sand. There's a fence. Means barbed wire. There's a road, and there's a Humvee driving down that road. And then there's sand. Well, actually, not sand. Then there's something that grows, and then there's a house, right? So house, something growing, Humvee on a road, fence, sand, and house. So the point is they leave you alone means they're not around where you are. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Huh? Right?
That's called...
That's called the West Bank.
Yeah, that's exactly
Gaza. So therefore, yeah, like that. Well, Gaza means there's a wall.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't use barbed wire. Yeah, he says barbed wire goes where the sand is.
To a certain extent, it works.
Yeah, so it's basically, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
You know, kind of things. It's.
I like the humble. Huh? I like the humble.
you're interested in the middle term.
Yeah.
Okay. Irregular middle. In a correct inference, the middle term is uniformly and without exception related to the major term. An irregular middle term is destructive to an inference because it can lead to a wrong conclusion. Right. So that's the whole thing. Is that it's the connection between the middle and the major. Mm-hmm. So if the middle term is wrong. You know, it's not actually connected. Mm. Then you know it comes up with something else. So in here, you can see the smoke, you can see the hill, but then you say there's you know because there's smoke on the mountain. Therefore, there's a hippopotamus. He's just like, what's the smoke got to do with the hippopotamus? Like that, because it's land. It's a hill. If it was water, it'd be an octopus, right? Yeah, it's like that. You know.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yes, if you say so.
Hippos like water too.
That's true. So that's even more of a, yeah. So then that's a, then the water becomes more of a universal kind of thing. The hippopotamus is even a better example because you can use him both on land and in the water. Yeah. Like that. I don't know if he'd fit in your fridge, but at least in your backyard.
Yeah.
For example, all Himalayan beings are saints. Tigers are Himalayan beings, therefore tigers are saints. Right? You know, as we were saying before, God is good, so therefore whatever is good is God.
Yeah.
Right, you know, like that. The conclusion of this inference cannot be said to be correct because the middle term, Himalayan beings, is not invariably related to the major term, saints. Himalayan beings come in many different varieties. Instead of leading to one single valid conclusion, such an irregular middle term leads to varied opposite conclusions. Right? So that's the thing, is that connection is there. Right. So, okay. Means devotional is good. Therefore, and giving in charity is good. So giving in charity is devotional. Right. So that's the difficulty, is that it's that, what do you mean by good? You know, because the problem is devotional is a term beyond. Viruddha, the second type of fallacy, means contradictory middle. Okay, so the other one, what was it says? Irregular middle. It means it doesn't actually connect. So contradictory middle is one that dismisses the very proposition it is meant to prove. Right. So the other one, it could be that, but it could be something else. It's irregular. It has so many different things, and it could therefore cause a contradiction. This one means it automatically causes a contradiction.
Yeah.
For example, sound is eternal because it is caused. Right. How will it be eternal if it's caused?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Whatever has a cause is non-eternal. And so here the middle term, caused, does not prove the eternity of sound, but rather confirms its non-eternity.
Mm.
Right? Sometimes people do that. They'll say something and they actually confirm
their own.
The distinction between an irregular middle and a contradictory middle is that while the irregular middle fails to prove its conclusion, the contradictory middle proves the opposite of what is intended. The third type, sat pratipaksha, means inferentially contradictory middle. This type of fallacy arises when the middle term of an inference is contradicted by the middle term of another inference that proves a completely opposite fact about the major term. Right? So in other words, the minor term may always remain the same, but the major term, by one proves the major term, the other one proves the major term in a completely different way. Right? In other words, you have, two middle terms. Each one deals with the major term, but each one contradicts each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then by applying it, then someone could apply the other one and get an exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the argument, sound is eternal because it is audible, is contradicted by the inference, sound is non-eternal because it is produced, as a pot is produced. Right. So they contradict each other. Sound stays the same. Right? It's what you're trying to establish. But then the problem is you get two different things. One is because it's audible, and the other is because it's produced. Like they don't really have anything to do with each other, so they contradict each other. So that's why when this comes up, you have to keep them to the line of thinking that you're using.
Well,
yes.
It seems to me that the second one, it's non-internal because it's produced, that's actually a valid point. But the first one, I don't see how it can be eternal because it's audible. I mean, that's
another thing, but the point is the produced and the audible aren't actually connected.
No, that's
the point. So then. You know what I'm saying is that's what be used when saying talking apples and oranges.
Mm.
You know, you're saying one thing and they're saying completely different thing. They're not connected. It's not like you're discussing the same topic.
Yeah.
Right? You have the same purpose of trying to establish something, but what you're discussing is very different.
To continue in that way, the person you have to somehow make him stick to it is either apples or oranges.
Yes, that's it. So either you switch and discuss his, whatever he's discussing, his apples. Otherwise, you discuss the oranges. You know what I'm saying? So it depends who you're talking to, right? So if you're in Kazakhstan, you discuss apples. Right? If you're in the Middle East, you discuss oranges. Right? No? Yeah, then you get both. Yeah. If they move from one place to the other, then they get both. Yeah.
I've seen you sometimes in class, someone makes a question, so you go back to the question and you clarify, so then you can proceed.
Yeah, because otherwise they're taking something very different. Like we had this morning, where, like, when we, when we, not The person was sitting there, but he's not sitting now. You're sitting there. But it was that religious element. I don't remember exactly what it was, but what he was discussing wasn't actually the point we were making. Mm-hmm. But it's because this one produces this emotion, that one produces the emotion, the connection was that, but actually what he was discussing were two different things. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. The distinction between a contradictory middle and an inferentially contradictory middle is that in the former, the contradictory middle, the middle term itself proves the contradiction of its conclusion, while in the latter, the contradiction of the conclusion is proved by another inference. Okay. Distinction between the contradictory middle, an inferential contradictory middle, is that form of the middle term itself, okay, the term itself proves the contradiction, while in the latter the contradiction of the conclusion proved by another inference. So here you're inferring because you've added in the pot. Right? So the pot is produced, so therefore. So in other words, this will come up when you're giving your examples. So you have to be very careful in there. The fourth type of fallacy is a siddha, an unproved middle. In this type of fallacy, the middle term is not an established fact, but is an unproved assumption. For example, the sky lotus is fragrant because it has lotusness like a natural lotus. Here the middle term, lotusness, does not have any substantial existence because such a thing as sky lotus does not actually exist. Right? So that will you'll find that a lot also. The fifth is bodhita, a non-inferentially contradictory middle, right? So there's inferentially contradictory, then there's like that. Here the middle term is contradicted by some other source of knowledge. For example, examples are fire is cold because it is a substance, and sugar is sour because it produces acidity. Here cold and sour are the major terms, and substance and acidity are the middle terms. The existence of heat in the fire and sweetness in sugar is directly perceived by the senses. So one has to consider substance and acidity as contradictory middle terms. Therefore, the inference is fallacious. Right? Fire is cold because it is a substance. Right? So you're saying substance is a cold, so fire is cold. And fire is a substance, therefore fire is cold. Right? So it's not non-inferentially. It's something that you can directly perceive, but it's wrong. Right? Like sugar is sour because it produces acidity. Someone may eat and get acidity, but it's not sugar produces that. The sugar, even after it digests, when it changes, it still remains sweet. Right? And sour, after it digests, it remains sour. Right? Salty will turn into sugar. Right, and bitter pungent and astringent will turn into hot after digest. So there's no connection that sour ever turns into, sugar ever is sour, right? Neither by perception nor by how it functions. So just okay. So we see that much of the time they're not connected properly. Or they just contradict, right? So this is the much of what's happening, just subtleties in how it's contradicting. Comparison. Okay, comparison. Oh, now we finished pratyaksha, inference. Now we're doing comparison. Okay, upamana. According to Nyaya, comparison is the third valid source of experiential knowledge. This kind of knowledge comes when one perceives the similarity between the description of an unfamiliar object and its actual appearance before one's senses. For example, suppose that a trustworthy person has told you that there is such a thing as a crab apple that looks like a regular red apple, but is smaller and has a longer stem. One day in the woods, you come upon a tree bearing fruit you have never seen before, but that reminds you of apples. You then remember your friend's description of crab apples, and you come to the conclusion that this must be a crab apple tree. This source of knowledge, Upamana, is not recognized as valid in many of the other systems of Indian philosophy. The Charvaka system of philosophy, for instance, does not accept this as a source of knowledge, because this system maintains that perception is the sole source of valid knowledge. The Buddhist system of philosophy recognizes Upamana as a valid source of knowledge, but regards it as a mere compound of perception and testimony. Right? So therefore, it will just absorb it into there. The Vaisheshika and Shankya systems explain Upamana as simply a form of inference. Right? Because you said, you know, this is there, and that's there. So in other words, you're taking the explanation to be your reason. Right, so you have the apple, and then it means whatever it is. You have the crab apple, and so then his explanation about it's like an apple, but it's not an apple, like that, is then your inference. So they just absorb it into inference. And the Jain system maintains this merely a kind of recognition. The Mimamsa and Vedanta systems agree with Nyaya in considering Upamana as an independent source of knowledge, but they explain it in a different way, which will be discussed in the chapter on Mimamsa. Okay. So in this way, then, it's established that it's there. So others don't, because the point is even if they don't, they'll accept it in another aspect. So you can still use it, but you just have to, you know, some sense. Yeah. Testimony. Shabda, or testimony, literally means words. It is the knowledge of objects derived from words or sentences, and is, according to Nyaya, the fourth and final source of valid experiential knowledge. Not all verbal knowledge, however, is valid. In Nyaya philosophy, shabda is defined as the statement of an apta, a person who speaks and acts the way he thinks. Right? So in other words, if you speak one way, act another way, then it's not considered valid, right? Like that. Unless what you're saying is according to an apta. If you're quoting an apta, then you can take it, because it's still shabda. Like that. But it has to eventually go back to someone who what they speak and what they do is the same, right? And so Krishna is the ultimate apta, right? Because what he says is what happens, you know, is what he does. Yes?
What if you're like a hardcore hedonist and you actually live the lifestyle to the extreme, would you be considered
a... It means then the point that you make, that shabda would be. So let us take, for example, a chain smoker smokes 5 packs a day and he tells you smoking's not good. You can take that as authoritative. You know what I'm saying?
He's not living his word, though.
But in the negative... It's just means, in other words, he's attached to it, and that's why you shouldn't get involved in it. You know, so it's bad. He wants to break it, but he can't.
Yeah.
So he believes what he's telling you. Yeah. It's not that he can necessarily act according to it, but he actually believes it. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's following it in the negative. That's why you can take knowledge even from an impure place. Mm-hmm. So you can take good instruction from a sinful person, because the sinful person is the most knowledgeable about how bad sin is, if he's thoughtful. So that means he has to be. That has to be this aspect of apta. You know, because many of them, you know, they say all kinds of stupid stuff, but there's those they say the reality of it. You know, such a person's mind, action, and speech are in perfect harmony, and he is therefore accepted as an authority. Right, but you know, but it would be more limited.
Yeah.
You know, if one is, you know, just completely hedonist, then it's limited to that area of hedonism. So if he says, you know, this is really good, you know, sensually, then you know it is, but that's all the farther you can go. You know.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, you wouldn't accept his authority in some other areas. Like that. Thus, his verbal or written statement is considered to be a valid source of knowledge. The Veda is considered to be the expression of certain... venerable aptas, great sages who realized the truth within and who transmitted their experiences into words. The validity of the Veda is derived from the authority of these aptas. Right, so he's, yeah, like that. But ultimately it goes back to the Lord.
Yeah.
You know. So that's the thing. So even if they don't accept, at least they've accepted the sages who have written or documented, or who it's about. The Vedas are talking about discussions between, you know, great personalities. So these great personalities are optas. Therefore, the knowledge being given there is that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But where is a distinction between a sage and a great sage? Is somebody who has some like full apta?
Because it always has to be parampara. So if you're just you know, a sage rather than a great sage, but then what you're saying is a sage has to be grace based on the great sage, right? In other words, the param, it should go back in line. Yes. It should be able to be traced back through authority, like that. Unless it's something just perceiving of the senses, then that you can get from someone who actually lives that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, like you could take authoritative how to build a, you know, house out of ice, you know, from an Eskimo, you know, because that's what they do, mm-hmm. like that. But, you know, other things you might not, you know, let's say, you know, how to get, you know, tickets to the New York Yankees game, you might not ask him.
Cooking.
Yeah, that also you might not, at least the right variety of cooking. Do they cook at all?
I mean,
they have fire. But
they do have fire.
Yeah. They cook.
Well, they
seals,
eat
whales.
But they can also
part
eat
of the seals.
The Japanese also eat them, but they don't bother cooking.
Right? Oh, that's the different
nutrients. Yeah. Well, someone made the point that Japanese are so impatient that they can't even wait to cook the fish. That's why they eat it raw. Whether that's true or not, that's another thing, but that was the observation. Okay, so back to...
Yeah, moving on.
Yes?
There's certain types of knowledge that aren't necessarily lived, like, for example, geography. You can accept, like, someone's authority on his statement without him adopting the lifestyle that corresponds to his area of expertise, right?
Means, but how do you mean by geology?
Like, let's say you have a university professor, and his shabda, you accept that, I don't know, there's like three kinds of rocks that are out there, igneous and whatever. And
but is he a geologist?
Yeah.
So that means all he thinks about all day is rocks.
Yeah.
Right. So in that way, then you could accept on that. But the point is, it's his kind of people have said that there are three kinds of rocks. But the problem is that where does that go back to? So it only comes from their observation. So even though on one level it's a kind of shabda, it wouldn't be taken as a shabda in trying to understand something higher, you know, the metaphysical or the spiritual, because it's not coming from those optas before. There is no parampara.
Right.
You know, if the parampara ends at leaky, you got problems. You know, like that. So then, yeah, so it's just limited to that area. But if, for what you want to get done, then you're using that kind of knowledge, then this person, he lives that, therefore you could take his authority.
Right.
Does that make sense? You know, like the fireman tells you how the fire works and how to avoid it. So he's always working with that. So that's... Does that make sense? But these are ordinary kind of things. But for your nyaya, because its ultimate point is to free yourself from the material world, therefore it has to go back to those sages who are freed from the material world, because they have to be those who are living that. So then the shabda ultimately has to go back to the Veda. So then it would limit it there. But in general, because we're giving a general concept, is that how valid knowledge is gained by hearing shabda. Is that yeah. The validity of verbal knowledge depends on two conditions. First, the meaning of the statement must be perfectly understood. And second, the statements must be the expression of a trustworthy person, that is, an apta. There are two main ways of classifying shabda or testimony. The first method of classification divides testimonial knowledge into two categories. based on the nature of the object of the knowledge. The first category consists of the trustworthy assertions of ordinary persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters related to the perceptible objects of the world. Examples are the evidence given by expert witnesses in court, the statements of reliable physicians about physiology, and scriptural declarations concerning the performance of certain rites. The second type of testimony consists of the trustworthy assertions of persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters concerning the supersensible realities. Examples are the physicist's assertion about atoms, a nutritionist's statements regarding vitamins, prophet's instructions on virtue, and scriptural statements about God and immortality. Okay. Two main ways of classifying shabda. Okay, so that the first one divides it into two: trustworthy assertions of ordinary persons on things that are perceptible, or by those who trustworthy assertions of persons concerning what's beyond the senses. Okay. Then, so that's one. The second way of classifying shabda is based on the nature of the source of knowledge. This method categorizes all testimonies being either scriptural or secular. Here the word scriptural refers only to the sacred writings related to the Veda and the Veda itself. The words of scriptural testimony are considered to be perfect and infallible. Secular shabda is the testimony of fallible human beings and therefore may be either true or false. Secular testimony that comes from a trustworthy person is valid, but the rest is not. So the other one is it comes from a trustworthy person. So in other words, it's only trustworthy persons, whether you can perceive it or you can't perceive it, but it has to be from a trustworthy person. Now this other is it's dividing it into scriptural or secular. So scriptural means it's always valid. And secular, then, it's dependent on that first type, means they're trustworthy. Mm-hmm. If they're not trustworthy, it's not valid. Yeah. Right? Because it's not automatic that secular knowledge is valid. Well, that's the thing about the scriptural. You don't have to worry if it's valid or not. It is.
But there's mistaken ways of interpreting the scripture.
That's there. Yeah. Yes, that's there. But the scripture itself.
Yeah.
Like if you speak to somebody from a different faith, the authority of the Veda is not universal for them.
That's there, but then that's secular, technically. Right, it may be religious, it means it may be religiously secular. Right. Because it's only dealing with a particular area.
So that's Naimittic.
Yes, so it's actually Naimittic. Right. Then the problem is applying Naimittic when the situation in which it arose doesn't apply anymore. These people are always walking around with herds of sheep, so if they don't have herds of sheep, it doesn't apply. You know, how do you work it out? You know. The Nyaya system gives a detailed description of the nature of shabda because testimony is considered to be a valid source of knowledge and should therefore be analyzed thoroughly. In a scripture or a testimony, words and sentences are used, but what is a sentence? What is a word? And what is the nature of their construction? Hence, a sentence may be viewed as a group of words arranged in a certain manner, and a word as a group of letters or phonemes arranged in a specific order. The essential nature of any word lies in its meaning, and there must be specific rules governing the arrangement of words in the formation of sentences. Without such rules, the words spoken, even by a trustworthy person, an apta, could be reordered to convey a different meaning from the one intended, or could mislead a common person because of a lack of clarity of meaning. Footnote 1. The Nyaya system states that all words are significant symbols, and that all words have the capacity to designate their respective objects. This capacity of words is called shakti, potency, and in the Nyaya system, potency is said to be the will of God. Somehow I'm just seeing a whole bunch of crusaders sitting on horses going, it's the will of God.
Yeah, this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur called Abhida Shakti. Chaitanya Shakti.
Abhida.
Yeah, from where we get the word Abhideya.
Oh, Abhideya. Oh, yeah, Abhida Shakti.
Concept.
Okay. So in other words, it's the will of God. That's why then the natural use of the words and the grammar that's used, then that's the closest to its natural form. The words used in a sentence have certain meaning because of the potencies within them. And that is why they express certain meanings in a particular context. In other words, the Lord enters those words through his potency. Therefore, it's Shakti. Right? Or what do you say? Abhita Shakti. And so that's why the word has that potency.
They call it connotative power.
Connotative power. Okay. Yeah, it says in the particular context. Yeah. So the ordering of a word of words in a sentence is very important. In addition, Nyaya maintains that there are four other factors that are essential in proper functioning of sentence. Without the fulfillment of these four conditions, a sentence cannot express the intended meaning. These conditions are akanksha, expectancy, yogyata, fitness, sannidhi, proximity, and tatparya, intention. I wonder if we should get into this because we have 2 minutes. Because this keeps going.
Yeah.
The next. Two bayats. Okay. So we're seeing it's very exact. The Vedic system, it's not just. Means the point is how you feel is fine. What you're trying to express is how you feel or what you understand. But there's still a science through which it's expressed. And it's not that you can just say anything and do anything and you've expressed it. Right? It actually has to technically or scientifically match. Then it's considered proper. Yeah. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai,
Chaitanya Gaura ki
jai. Maharaj, does this devotee Srila Prabhupada decide he wanted to
give that to me?
Okay. He's leaving today, so
okay,
he wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't know if
what if that's him?
Involved in making up this book in some way or something.
No, no, he's the one that did it.
Oh, okay.
But he doesn't put his name.
Oh, wow.
Very clever.
Very clever.
No.